everyone, to the regular session of the Springfield Planning Commission for April 2nd, 2019. We'll go ahead and take attendance. The chair is here. Vice Chair Sherwood?
Here.
Commissioner Vogts?
Here.
Commissioner Landon?
Here.
Commissioner Bergen?
Here.
Commissioner Gill?
Here.
And Commissioner McGinley?
Here.
If we could all rise, I'd ask Commissioner Gill to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Are there any requests for adjustments to the agenda? Hearing none, at this time, we will get testimony from the audience as long as it is not addressing the subject of our hearing tonight. If there's anyone who'd like to testify, would you please check in with our planning secretary? Okay, hearing none. Tonight we're having a public hearing for quasi-judicial request for a Type 3 discretionary use permit and a Type 2 major site plan modification for proposed bulk gas storage and distribution facility located at 3500 Commercial Avenue. Cases 811-19-38-TYP3 and 811-19-37-TYP2. We'll start off with discussion of the quasi-judicial public hearing by our city attorney. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The hearing tonight is characterized as a quasi-judicial hearing. Quasi-judicial means that certain due process procedural rights are associated with this decision-making process, which include the right to notice, to present evidence, to have a written decision based upon standards, and to an impartial decision-maker. The primary purpose of the hearing is to establish a record upon which a decision can be made. The criteria for tonight are posted on the wall and outlined in the staff report. For a discretionary use application, they are at 5.9-120. And for a site plan, they are at, I'll come back to that and read that at the end. We don't have those up on the wall, so I'll have to find
those. Like 17.
What was it?
I think it's like 17.
5.
It's 5.17-125
for the site plan decision.
Please
note the following important aspects of tonight's hearing. You must raise procedural and substantive issues at this hearing, or you will be prohibited from raising those issues subsequently on appeal before the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals. A person raising an issue must support the issue with statements or evidence that is sufficiently specific so that the Planning Commission has an opportunity to respond to the concern or issue. If you are the applicant, you must raise concerns regarding any proposed conditions of approval to preserve your right to appeal and or seek damages in circuit court, and failure to raise constitutional or other issues relating to the proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the Planning Commission or City Council to respond to the issues precludes an action for damages in circuit court. The Planning Commission will issue its decision after the public hearing and record is closed. The Planning Commission's decision is final, but can it be appealed to the City Council? Any person who wishes to appeal should consult an attorney regarding the deadline and form of appeal. Oregon Land Use Law requires that the Planning Commission disclose any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest related to this matter, allow any person to challenge the Planning Commission for bias. Generally, a conflict of interest involves a situation where the decision maker, his or her family, or business would benefit by or suffer by his or her decision. An ex parte contact is a communication to the decision maker that includes substantive issues regarding the application and occurs outside the public venue. Commissioner, at this time it is appropriate to open the public hearing and declare ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest.
I hereby open the public hearing. Are there any commission members who have a potential conflict of interest or ex parte contact? Hearing none, are there any challenges to any commissioners for bias? Hearing none, we will have our staff report by Andy Limber. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. This application is for an existing industrial site at 3500 Commercial Avenue. In eyeballing the location, I'm going to venture it's pretty close to the geographic center of Springfield. This site is bounded on the south by Commercial Avenue. It has continuous street frontage. The road kind of, I guess you could say, curves to the right and then becomes 35th Street. So there's a discussion about the public street frontage in the staff report. It is uninterrupted along this frontage. It also borders the Southern Pacific Railroad line. I believe it's a dedicated line to International Paper. So it's somewhat isolated by transportation facilities. It is zoned heavy industrial and has an existing industrial building on the site. It was built in 1998. So it has been operating previously as a chemical storage warehouse. The request this evening is for bulk gas distribution facilities, which triggers a discretionary use permit under the heavy industrial district standards. The zoning right now, as I mentioned, is heavy industrial. It's contiguous with other sites that are both developed and undeveloped that are heavy industrial. The properties to the south across Commercial Avenue are light medium industrial, and it transitions into some residential internal to the Adams Platt area. People familiar with the Adams Platt, it's a mixture of commercial and industrial and residential uses. They're mostly surrounded by industrial uses, but there's some also internal to the Adams Platt area. So it borders that historic area of Springfield. The proposed site development plan calls for a formalization of the driveways along the frontage of the site. Right now, and I'll show in some pictures, everything west of the building before the applicant put up some temporary fencing was pretty much a free-for-all. It was gravel and there was no real restricted access onto, despite it being private property. As you'll see in some of the pictures, it was utilized for a variety of, I guess I'd call it unauthorized purposes. So the applicant is proposing to limit access to a right-in driveway along the south boundary of the site, and then a driveway, an alternate driveway, in the northwest corner. Everything else would be fenced off and access would be limited to those three gated driveways. The other driveway is an existing driveway at the southeast corner of the property. The applicant is also proposing to add some outdoor covered storage and work areas, a truck loading dock area on the west side of the building, additional parking, additional truck maneuvering and driving areas, and also public sidewalk along the entire frontage from its boundary on the southeast corner all the way wrapping around to the northern edge of the property where it nears the railroad tracks. In some of the pictures, you'll also see that there is definitely a dedicated pedestrian path that's been beaten down along the front. So there has been pedestrian usage along this area, and this will allow it to be accommodated formally through a public sidewalk. The site will also be developing on-site vegetative stormwater treatment facilities, installing street trees consistent with the city's requirements for public improvements along the street frontage, and also will be creating a new pedestrian crosswalk just on the north edge of the intersection of Commercial Avenue and 35th Street. So there's a ramp and a sidewalk on the west side, and the applicant will be tying in a ramp on the east side along their frontage and striping a crosswalk to create a formal pedestrian crossing in this area. So that was the preferred location along what is somewhat difficult frontage because of the road geometry. There isn't currently curb and gutter along this frontage. As you see in the pictures, it is developed as essentially an industrial road. It doesn't have all of the street improvements east of the intersection of Commercial Avenue 35th. So just a couple of pictures. In the foreground, you can see there's kind of a grassy ditch area. There's a gravel shoulder. Just along the fence line, there's a clear path that has been trod by pedestrians. The applicant has painted the building. They've occupied it with some of their activities, not including the request this evening for bulk gas distribution and storage. They were allowed to occupy through a change of use for this facility. The other site improvements are contingent upon the site plan modification that's also in your package this evening. So what you see before you, there would be street trees replaced. Two of them are not alive. This is from last summer. And so there'd be street trees installed along the front edge. The fencing would be continued. And this is on the west side right now. This is previous to the temporary fencing. The area was just kind of a gravel swath used for parking, used for shortcutting the street intersection, used for people driving around in the middle of the night and other purposes. Despite it being private property, it was pretty much an unstructured use. You can see, looking at the pictures of the tracks of the vehicles intersecting the road at a variety of locations on a curve, certainly less than desirable situation. This would be alleviated with this proposal to fence and formalize the access to bring essentially the usable area of the site out to the edge of the right-of-way. And so all of this area would be part of the operations of the site internal to their fence. So it improves the safety and also essentially lays claim to what is private property by fencing it and, you know, formalizing the access through gated driveways. That's all I had for pictures. I can go back to the site plan. So the recommendation before you for the discretionary use is for approval subject to the condition of the accompanying site plan modification, which implements some of the conditions and criteria under the discretionary use. I'm going to go over some of the conditions of the site plan modification. Many are, I would call, standard conditions to deal with the stormwater, etc. But I'll summarize them. Typically, the city requires for private stormwater facilities a maintenance agreement so that they will remain functional and can be maintained into the future. So that's conditions essentially 1 through 3 of your accompanying staff report for the site plan modification. Staff was looking for additional details on their design to ensure that they comply with the city's specifications. The applicant will also need to ensure that the vegetation is established or is installed temporary measures to prevent erosion and sediment on the site and no sediment from reaching the public stormwater facility, which is on 35th Street. Fire department has requested a NOx system, which it allows for emergency access to the gated driveways after hours. Essentially, it's an override. If it's a manually operated gate, it's a padlock. If it's a electronic gate, there's a key gate switch, and it allows for fire department to access the site should there be any call for emergency assistance, or if there's a fire, they would need to get through the gates. And that's one of the provisions the fire department is requesting. I don't think I can zoom into the southeast corner of the site, but the applicant is proposing to bring the public sidewalk into a corner of the property to avoid the existing ditch that's along 35th Street. And I think you'll probably see it on this picture. So on the left, where there's a little tree, along the edge of the pavement is a drainage ditch. The applicant is proposing to install a public sidewalk along the front edge that'll be parallel essentially with the ditch, but they don't want to get it too close because of the necessary slopes in order to maintain a reasonable transition between the sidewalk and where the drainage ditch is. So not to over-steepen the slopes or to make it a hazard, they want to bring the sidewalk as close to the property line as possible. And to address the engineering challenge of sidewalk in the ditch, they felt it was easier to bring it into just a very slight corner of the property, the southwest edge. So staff has requested that for that little piece of the sidewalk that is inside the property, private property, either dedicated as right-of-way, so it's entirely within the public realm, or provide for public access easement for that little stretch, just to legitimize the public crossing of private boundaries. So either way would be acceptable. Staff is also looking for additional information on the lighting for the site. There are some existing light poles, and you can see them in this picture. They're probably 60 feet high. They're proposed for removal. They would not be compliant under our current code standards for height of light placement. There are some existing light fixtures on the exterior of the building. They can remain, but if there are any additional light fixtures and also the existing ones, they need to demonstrate code compliance for downcast, shielded lighting that doesn't provide glare or light onto adjacent public rights of way, particularly. The manufacturer cut sheets for the lights are acceptable, and any photometric information they can provide to the final site plan. The applicant has been in discussions with sub-drinking water protection. The representative is away until tomorrow, is trying to contact them because they're monitoring wells on the site. And planning staff is not entirely sure what the nature of the materials are underground that are causing concern, but they will remain accessible by sub. So there is an existing easement on the site that allows for sub to access for monitoring of these wells. The wells have been incorporated into the site plan and will remain accessible. The applicant will need to obtain a drinking water protection permit or an exemption for this project and consistent with sub drinking water protection standards. The nature of the activities, as I understand it, a lot of the activities are associated with recharge of fire extinguishers and other processes. And so it's not specifically a hazard or high degree of hazard, but there may be a cumulative amount of hazardous materials that would trigger requirement for drinking water protection. I'd also note that by granting the discretionary use permit, it does allow for bulk gas storage and distribution into the future with this property should it change hands. The same type of activity would be allowable. It would be subject to fire and building safety codes if it was combustibles or highly explosive, poisonous, that sort of thing. Staff understands that that's not the case for this particular applicant, but it does provide that approval for this site that would then carry forward from this point. So that essentially summarizes the staff report for this application. I believe there's representatives from the applicant here this evening if you have any specific questions, but I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Questions? Mr. Sherpop.
So on criteria approval number four, for the vegetation, sorry, you're scrolling through. Would Development Public Works place a time limit to fully set up the rain garden?
Yes, typically it's a growing season.
Okay, and at that point there, so the acceptable erosion control, at that point that would no longer be acceptable, it'd need to be. The rain guard would need to be in place.
Correct, because typically what staff will do is we'll go and when they're looking for essentially final sign off on the site, staff will inspect the stormwater facilities along with the other improvements on the site to make sure that they're compliant. And if they're not, typically we, depending upon the circumstances, there's provide opportunity to correct the matter. Sometimes it's seasonality, sometimes it's weather. And so typically if there isn't vegetation established, they'd have to put down some other type of temporary measures. It may be some matting, it may be some of the what they call bio bags, which essentially prevents sediment from being washed into the stormwater system. It's in the applicant's interest to do that because it just creates an immediate maintenance issue if there's a lot of sediment being deposited in there facilities that they've designed as being filtering and infiltration type of facility. So hopefully, through management on the site and the measures that they implement, not only will it get the vegetation established, but it also won't create an immediate maintenance headache for the applicant to maintain these facilities. So.
Thank you.
A couple myself. First of all, regarding the storm drain, I noticed that there were double chambered catch basins called out. Would those be the same type as are generally seen on City of Springfield standard drawings? Basically, concrete structures, two concrete structures connected so that they'd have both the function of sumps for sediment control and also certain amount of retention?
I don't believe that there are two concrete structures connected. Typically, it's like a metal insert.
Okay.
I guess not having evaluated the ones on the site, it's usually there's a separate system that does provide like essentially a sediment trap that can be then vacuumed out. It allows for maintenance access separately. It's typically a lot smaller scale than what you'd see in some like a public street situation.
Okay, and then it also looked as if they had some sort of oil filtration media or
yes,
some type of stuff in those. So that it's a definite improvement over the existing storm system. Also a nice robust planting plan. So it's definitely going to bring some beautification to that.
Yes, definitely.
So
there's going to be a significant change to that.
My concern is still about the chemicals, the change to the gas storage. That it would appear that the gas could be basically changed at will with fire department approval, so that there could actually be flammable, like explosive, caustic, or poisonous gases brought in under fire department protection.
That's correct.
Under this change. And at that point, there would be no opportunity for additional input from either the public or the planning commission.
Correct.
To make those changes.
And I think, and staff recognizes that, but I guess notes that the site's location is somewhat isolated by roads and railroad tracks. It has an interior chemical storage component that is a reinforced separate room that was built under, I guess, fairly recent fire code standards to allow for hazardous material storage under the previous occupant. So that does lend itself to this type of use. It's not to say that that's where all the gases would be stored, however. There could be, as an example, you know, propane or something like that. It could be on the outside. It has to be sufficiently safeguarded against being struck by vehicles. But similar to like a, you know, service station, it could be located, you know, on the site for distribution. So that'd be one thing. Potentially flammable.
Without, and this may be a question for legal too, but without triggering an additional hearing, etc., would there be a way to include notification to surrounding properties and opportunity for input from those properties should that type of change be requested?
I guess, you know, notification was given to property owners about this change.
Yes.
And there was no response.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess there could be a mechanism to provide that sort of notification, and I guess it would be up to if anyone responded or chose not to respond, that would be up to them. But, you know, the site was posted, mm-hmm. physically posted, and notices were sent out both for the site plan modification application as well as the discretionary use public hearing. And staff received no comments, no phone calls, no requests for information.
Okay.
And so bulk gas storage and distribution was not specified as to what the nature of the gases were with that application. It was just that was the trigger for the discretionary use.
Okay.
So there had not been a request for further information or expression of any concern with that application.
Thank you. Any further questions? Hearing none, do we have any testimony from the applicant?
Are you here for the applicant?
Okay, hearing none, we have received no requests for testimony from any members of the public opposed, in support, or neither in support nor opposed to the application. So is there any summation you'd like to do?
I think that based on some of the feedback we've received previously in review, we'd want to look at possibly amending one of the conditions regarding the lighting. And that was to specify that not only the location, but also the placement height of the fixtures. That was one thing that staff did not specifically require. And so in this case, because of the building height, it's not likely that there will be placement of lights that are higher than allowable by code, but it's typically it's 25 feet or the height of the building, whichever is higher, or whichever is less, I should say. I think the building is right around 25 feet high at the top. But the lighting plan that the applicant is being requested to provide should not only locate the location, but also the placement height of those light fixtures. And that would be something staff is suggesting to provide in the final site plan modification approval.
Thank you.
Chair, can we just note for the audio for the future that the applicant's representative is here, but didn't have anything to add to the staff report? In case it comes up in the future, we'll be able to hear it on the audio.
The applicant is present, but chose not to testify. Do we have any consideration for request of continuation of the public hearing or an extension of the written record, either of those or both? Hearing none, is there do we have a motion to close the public hearing?
Motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner McGinley, second by Commissioner Bowes. Is there a motion to close the written record?
I move to close the written record.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Sherwood, second by Commissioner Landon. Written record is hereby closed. Are all in favor?
Aye.
All in favor of closing the public hearing?
Aye.
Okay, the public hearing and written record are hereby closed. Discussion. Hearing none, do we have a motion to approve with conditions or deny the application?
I move to approve case 811-19-38-TYP3, an application for discretionary use permit for proposed bulk gas storage and distribution facility located at 3500 Commercial Avenue, map 17-02-31-21, tax lots 2700 and 2800, because the amendments meet the applicable criteria of approval based upon the findings in the staff report and as conditioned in the staff report.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Sherwood, second by Commissioner Bowes. All in favor?
Aye.
Do we have a motion to approve or deny the site plan modification?
I move to approve case number 811-19-37-TYP2, an application for a major site plan modification for a proposed bulk gas storage and distribution facility located at 3500 Commercial Avenue, map 17-02-31-21, tax lots 2700 and 2800, because the amendments meet the applicable criteria of approval based upon the findings in the staff report and as conditioned in the staff report.
Changes.
The the following change being a change the first sentence of condition 8 to state the final site plan shall depict the location and height of existing and proposed light fixtures to be used on the site.
We have a second?
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Bowes, second by Commissioner Sherwood. All in favor?
Aye.
Major site plan modification is approved. Thank you. Do we have a report of council action?
I attended on March 18th in place of Commissioner Bergen. So there was some public testimony regarding the city manager and suggesting revisions to the car camping program here in Springfield. Other than that, it was actually mostly a work session, and they were discussing, our staff was discussing even more of the transportation system plan update, which I know you all have spent a lot of time with before. So the big thing was street standards and motor vehicle parking standards, and then possibly testing out a new land use based approach to bicycle planning. So maybe having specific standards for commercial areas versus residential areas. So that was something the city council was talking a lot about, and the mayor was specifically interested in like combining the sidewalk with a bike lane, kind of like a European approach, like a raised cycle track. But staff said that was something to be considered in the future and not in the TSP now. So there was a robust discussion there about bicycle lane standards, and that was about it. They culminated with discussing private streets. Lots of street stuff.
Further?
I attended the work session yesterday, April 1st. It was a discussion on the hiring of the city manager and the process that they're going through, deciding what questions they want to ask, how long they want the city manager to be in, the applicants to be in town, all sorts of details, just interview details and things like that. And that was much the same stuff covered, or the same type of thing covered as in my last attendance several weeks ago. So that's a process that they're working through. I did not make it to the regular session, and I informed staff and was hoping that staff would be able to fill us in on what happened in the regular session yesterday.
Actually, since our planner Lindbergh is here and he had two items, I'll let him talk about those and then I'll talk about the last item that they discussed.
Sure. So commissioners will be very familiar with one of the applications that went before council last night for first reading, which was the Falk Metro Plan Amendment Zone Change. That's for the assisted living facility at Deadman Ferry Road and Game Farm. It came before you multiple times. It was massaged and finessed and tweaked, and I would say bolstered through involvement of the Planning Commission and staff. And the City Council gave first reading to the amending ordinance, accepting recommendations of the Planning Commission. There was one person that provided testimony regarding existing traffic conditions on Game Farm Road, and I think that was echoed by some of the councilors as well. That's an existing situation. The city's going to have to address a number of transportation-related growing pains in the Gateway area as call centers, other employers are brought online, and there's been an intensification of use on Deadman Ferry Road and elsewhere with the hospital-related healthcare facilities, multifamily housing plan, and that sort of thing. So the transportation network is not complete yet, and it's feeling the effect of kind of bursting, I wouldn't say bursting at the seams, but there's definitely some bottlenecks and some areas that are creating some headaches for people in the area. So Transportation is well aware of it, and they're going to be working on hopefully some, maybe not solutions, but some ways to mitigate the problem. The other application that went before the city council was an annexation. The site is off of Horace Street, which is just west of South 42nd and Jasper Road, immediately south of the Mount Vernon Elementary School. There is a about a little bit over an acre of property there, and the last remaining segment of Horace Street will also be annexed concurrently. The plan is for multifamily housing. It is zoned for medium density residential, so upon annexation and improvement of the street and extension of utilities, there will be some opportunities for multifamily housing, likely duplexes in that area, but needed housing in the community. So it's on its way now. That's all I have for last night.
So there was also a third public hearing on truancy, and I can't really speak more to that.
I can speak to that.
But there was no public comment.
Yeah, so the truancy ordinance, the Springfield Municipal Court has been operating a truancy court that's designed when, you know, parents are cited for failing to keep their kids in school over a required amount of time. They've been running a diversion court, which is where you go in and you work towards compliance and get your charges dismissed. Under the state law, but it's not been specifically incorporated into our municipal code, and so it's always just better to have that stuff listed explicitly, even though we have sort of this archaic old authority to enforce state law. Even if it's not in the municipal code, it's just better and cleaner when it is. So it was to move that, incorporate that state statute into the municipal code so that it's very clear the court has the authority to continue that program and working with the school district.
Under general public comment, there were two people who were speaking to council asking that the council consider passing a resolution similar to Portland, taking a stand against hate speech. And then Jim Guthrie also spoke. He's been to the Planning Commission meeting. He lives on Brooklyn Street in Glenwood and is concerned about being able to get access to sanitary sewer without it costing too much and being getting city services, and so he's been working with his neighbors, and so he was speaking about that process with council. And then the item that also came to council was whether or not the council would support using home funds. So home is a federal allocation that we get as part of the Eugene Springfield Home Consortium for a Homes for Good project, which is in the location just north of Fred Meyer that had been developed or applied for development by Roy Gray. And so they have an option to purchase that to create 70 units of housing that would be affordable to low income residents, and so council did vote to support the funds going toward that project. The final decision will be made by the Home Consortium later this month, but I expect that it would be favorable since they've had favorable all along the way. And the mayor and the council very important are both on that Home Consortium governance committee.
I attended the March 25th, so there was a work session largely about the sign code for downtown, and there's still more to do, so there was a lot of good discussion. I think the council is working hard to strike they're having a lot of conversation to strike the balance between what's good for the whole downtown and for business owners to do what they need to do to promote their businesses. So they were, looking at size and height and volume and all of those kinds of things. There's more work to come with that, so we will see it again on their agenda. Then it was the Springfield Economic Development Agency meeting after that. And they appointed a new member to that, someone who will represent downtown. on there. And then they also had some conversation about using some of the Glenwood area urban renewal funds to continue a program that they tried out last year to provide library cards to households in Glenwood. It was a pretty popular program and really supports, you know, engaging Glenwood as they move in as part of the city and giving them access to the city resources that exist, but also helping the library pay the cost of that. So they opted to move forward with that. And if it goes higher, much higher than what happened, than the number of people who applied, who accessed the library cards last time, they will check in on it. They might be willing to contribute more to that, but they just want to check in so it doesn't go astronomical. It costs $90 if you're out of the city to have a library.
Any business from the Planning Commission? Hearing none. Business from the Development and Public Works Department?
Yes, I have some good news. So finally, we got formal approval from LCDC in terms of an order that our urban growth boundary expansion and the amendments to adopt an economic and urbanization element into our comprehensive plan, that whole package that had been adopted in December of 2017 by our City Council and Lane County Board of Commissioners, that had been then approved by the Commission, Land Conservation and Development Commission, in January of 2018, finally is formalized in writing earlier in March, and we expected an appeal. We had been told that there would be an appeal, but there was no appeal, and so we actually have an acknowledged amendment and a new UGB with the 2030 elements acknowledged. So, and as Andy's been preparing his staff reports and having, when we rely on those elements, we've been saying that that's been approved but not yet acknowledged, and so now we don't have that awkward situation anymore. So we're very happy about that, and it's kind of a whole shift in mindset now of we're not going to be on hold anymore, so we can move forward, which is a little bit unexpected, but a very nice place to be. So that project had started back in 2007 or 2008, so it's been a long process. Secondly, in terms of your upcoming meeting schedule, sorry about tonight that your work session was canceled. We will have Jim Donovan come back in 2 weeks to do that same topic, so you can keep your packet. I don't expect there be any changes, but you can keep the development review process handy. And Christina, who had been scheduled to do a training on legally defensible decisions, will shift that to, I believe it's May 21st, is when that one will come back to you instead. And then on May 7th, we have a public hearing, plan amendment, zone change, but we also have an unusual item which will need to come to the Planning Commission in a public meeting, but it is not a public hearing. And so we will start that meeting at 6:30. For that item, and then still have the hearing as scheduled at 7. So that will come out in your agenda, but I just wanted you to know ahead of time. So we won't start at 6, we will start at 6:30, and it will be a regular Planning Commission meeting right here in this room. And then in terms of the development code update, I want to let you know to check out the website for updates on that. There is a draft code audit that you can look at. Under the Community Technical Advisory Committee meeting for April, I'm sorry, I had meant to write down the date of when, anyway, the previous meeting has that draft that you could take a look at. That draft looks at both what is not clear and objective in our code, but also some impediments toward development. And so the next community technical advisory committee meeting is scheduled for April 8th from 3 to 5 p.m. in the library meeting room. And so they'll be continuing to review that draft document, that draft code audit. And they'll also specifically be looking at site plan review, which now you're somewhat familiar with if you hadn't been before, and then the multi-unit design standards. So, okay, that draft audit is in found in the packet for March 11th. I did write it down, I just didn't see it. And that's all I have to share.
I have one question on the, regarding the UGB process, which I've followed for many years, and various conversations that I've had during that period of time. My understanding is there's going to be a number of different studies that are going to have to take place as a follow-up to the final approval. And so I imagine there's going to be an initial workload based on them. But what, I know there's a groundwater study that's been mentioned. What other studies are also going to be needed to incorporate the UGB into the formal network of plans?
Yes, that's true. So just because they're now in the UGB doesn't mean that they're development ready. So we expanded in two areas as a recap, and then Gateway area is one, and then south, like down in the 28th Street area. So there's two, those two sections are where we expanded to meet our employment needs, and then we also included some large areas of public land as well. So there would need to be wetland, the natural resource studies would need to be up to date. Particularly in Gateway, we need to look at some of those traffic issues that Andy Lindbergh had referenced in terms of traffic. But the zoning that is put into place is a zoning that we don't have now. It's an agricultural zone. And there's a requirement that before any development happened, that either the city would have to do some kind of a planning process, like a refinement plan or a master plan, or the applicant, the property owner, would need to do that. So whether the burden falls on the city or the property owner is just a matter of who has the resources and the timing. But at this point in time, the city doesn't have the resources to do that. It's not in our immediate work program. So that's something that would have to be resourced by the city in order for us to be able to have the capacity to do that.
Thank you.
Any other information, questions? Okay, hearing none, hereby adjourn the regular session. So we can find a question.
I start with a